Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's May 15th. Currently 37 degrees. A bit of blue sky here in Old Town. And 44 reported in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. Today, of course, is your Thursday. Time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're going to be looking at more unsettled weather conditions expected across the area with a chance of scattered showers and a couple of rumbles of thunder. Could see some small hail. Could also see a couple of snowflakes mixed in above 8,000 feet. High temperatures in Park City only climbing to near 50 degrees as we go throughout today. The Heber Valley will see high temperatures climbing only into the upper 50s today. A few degrees warmer than the past couple of days, but still well below average for this time of the year. As we go into your Friday, we're looking at a somewhat drier trend trying to develop. We'll see temperatures starting off into the mid-30s across the area, but as we go throughout the day on Friday, look for partly to mostly cloudy skies. There's still a chance of an isolated shower or two, but the chances are going to be much lower for your Friday afternoon. Now, as we go into the weekend, we've got more big changes heading our way as another strong storm system begins to move into the area. A deep area of low pressure will move in, bringing us another good chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms across the area. In Park City, we're going to be looking at those high temperatures climbing into the mid-50s for your Friday afternoon, but we'll be in the low 60s by the time we get towards your Saturday afternoon. Highs will be climbing into the upper 60s to near 70 in the Heber Valley, but again, those chances of increasing showers and storms by Saturday afternoon into Saturday night. We'll continue with that chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms right on into your Sunday as well with a good chance. In fact, chances are looking likely for those showers and storms off and on. Temperatures will be climbing only in the upper 40s for Park City by Sunday for a high. And then in the Heber Valley, we're looking at highs into the mid-50s. As we go into the beginning of next week, Monday, we'll have a chance of a couple of snow showers around in Park City early in the morning. Otherwise, highs only in the upper 40s for you as we go throughout the day on Monday in Park City. Highs will be in the mid-50s for the Heber Valley. But after we get past Monday, we do see a drying trend with a warming trend. Highs back into the 60s in Park City by next week. And then we're looking at highs back in the low 70s for the Heber Valley. And that's a look at the latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Kane.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the Local News Hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Megan McKenna. Recapping yesterday's meeting, the CEO of Fire Films, Sharon Anderson Morris, with details about a free screening in Park City of the film The In-Between, about the only hospice for the homeless in America. And the executive director of Bridge 21, Stephanie Polkoff, and House resident Ava Jennings in with details on the opening of Park City's first neurodivergent housing. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Carrie Bearden, professor of psychiatry, biobehavioral sciences, and psychology, who explores the mounting evidence that regular cannabis use predicts an increased risk of schizophrenia and psychotic symptoms among teens. Then Surgeon General Gabriel Weston takes a scientific look at the wonder, mystery, and misconceptions of our anatomy. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio. Of course, you can hear that right after the Local News Hour. Taking a look at some local news now. Local brewery Offset Beer says it's outgrown its Iron Horse District home. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it's now moving from Park City proper to Quinns Junction.
The microbrewery has a pretty small footprint in Park City, says owner Connor Brown. Now the beer makers are eyeing something a little bigger. A 3,300-square-foot brewery and tap room in Quinns Junction at 4175 Forestdale Drive. They'd be neighbors with Jackson's Base Camp and Proverbial Spirits. Building owner Rob Nielsen secured permits at the Centerville Basin Planning Commission May 13th so Offset can move in. Offset served its first beer in the Iron Horse area of Park City in September of 2021. It has not announced the opening date for the new location. It'll be farther from town but closer to the rail trail. Offset organizes runs in the summer and uphill skiing in the winter. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
It's 8:11 now. The Park City Library hosting its first health fair to celebrate the grand opening of the new telehealth room on Saturday. The room is tucked away on the first floor of the library in the U Create Lab. Assistant Park City Library Director Angela DeHano says that the room can be rented for private virtual conversations between patients and medical providers.
The room has a computer with a camera, a small privacy screen, and a health kit that includes a blood pressure cuff, thermometer, and oximeter. Our hope is that this resource helps community members who don't have a private place at home to meet with their doctor or who don't have the resources to travel to appointments easily.
Three health kits were provided by the state library. Two of the kits stay in the telehealth room. She says a third can be checked out like a book. The library will also host its first ever health fair Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m.
We will have over 20 different local organizations giving out bilingual information about their missions and resources, including the People's Health Clinic, the Christian Center, Summit County Health, and others. We will also have a raffle with opportunity drawings giving away prizes. The University of Utah Plans will offer a insurance 101 class at 1:30. This bilingual class will teach the community about the importance of health insurance. The Hope Alliance will also hold a vision clinic on the third floor from 2 to 4 as well.
Later this month, the library will host its monthly Teen Zen Den on Saturday, May 24th at 1 o'clock. This class provides teens with skills to support concentration, reduce anxiety, and create connections with peers through breathwork and conscious movement. And local historian Dalton Galko will headline the Tuesday, May 27th local speaker series at 4 o'clock. He'll talk about Park City's early mining days. A link for more information about the upcoming events online at kpcw.org. In the studio now with an update from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Megan McKenna. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the restaurant tax grants. The committee decided that last week's grant allocations from restaurant sales tax money recommended rolling that $85,000 that Sundance did not receive into next year's fund. You okay with that? I mean, after the vote last week to deny the money?
Yeah, I think either way that the committee went, I think we would have supported. I think it would have been great to see those funds rolled out this year, but I think they made a really good argument for saving them for next year.
Yeah, so between the restaurant tax and the wrap tax, what raises more money? The restaurant, because it's 1% as opposed to, you know, a tenth of a percent?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that.
Okay. As we said, the Restaurant Tax Grant Committee had recommended money for Sundance for the wrap tax cultural grant, but the committee did not recommend funding Sundance at all. So why do you think the committee's handled this differently? Because one had made the recommendation, which was kind of then withdrawn from the council.
Yeah, that's... You know, I can't speak for the committee, but in terms of the wrap tax, that's recreation, arts, and parks tax. I think they likely saw what the restaurant tax committee decided and where the council fell on that and maybe opted to follow suit.
Okay. The committee had said that the interview with Sundance was rather vague. Both the committee and the council have had strong words for Sundance's grant cycle. Feels a little bit like the county is shaming Sundance for leaving. Is that the case?
I don't think that's the case. I think they, I think the committees do a really good job. It's a really tough job. It's become very competitive over the years. And so I think they have to weigh all of the applications equally. And I don't think it's a shaming on the county part. I think the county really does hope that the last year of Sundance is a good one.
Yeah, any concern about how, about whether the last festival will be a great send-off without getting any money?
Yeah, that's certainly been a concern. It was something that I considered as well. But I think going forward, they may not need those funds.
Yeah, some of that money was also used for the summer screening, so we're guessing that won't happen.
Yeah, that's another good question. I'm not sure about, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, let's see, tax abatements. A difficult tax abatement request yesterday from a homeowner in Silver Creek Village. Did you vote on this?
Yes, we all voted, of course. This was a tough one, as you mentioned. I was in favor of giving the refund, given the circumstances, but I think my colleagues made a good argument for setting precedent, and the county didn't make a mistake in this one, but I think the I think it brings up a good opportunity for our new housing authority to address these sorts of concerns. And I think we can work with our local stakeholders and try to provide more education and preventative measures so that we don't see incidences like this in the future.
Okay, so it was, what, a 4-1 vote then? Because the council denied it, but you were in favor of it, offering the abatement?
No, we voted unanimously for it. As I mentioned, in my comments, I did say that I was supportive of it, but I think my colleagues made a good reason for their decision, and so I voted with them.
Okay. Again, this homeowner lives in affordable housing and apparently have overpaid on taxes the past few years because they didn't know that they were being taxed as a second home, which is basically almost twice as much. Again, county council has been pretty adamant about this, is that it's not the county's mistake. So I think you had been concerned about maybe a language barrier involved in this.
Yeah, and as you mentioned before, these are really difficult decisions that we have to make, and I think my colleagues and past precedent has been set that if it's if the mistake was made on the side of the county, that we would correct that mistake. But we do the best we can to notify residents. And in this case, the resident did receive notice. Other stakeholders receive notice. And again, it's difficult. I would have liked to have provided the refund, but like I said, setting that precedent I think is important, and I think just highlights the need for other solutions, an opportunity for the Housing Authority to really address some of these issues.
Yeah, Mountlands Community Housing was there, and they said that a precedent would actually be good because they'd like to see the county's tax policy changed. Right now, when a property is purchased, it flips automatically from primary to secondary, apparently, in the tax system. So if affordable homes are already deed restricted for primary homes, isn't that proof enough that there's a full-time resident?
And that's, you know, that's what we would like to address, I think, going forward. I think there, the reason we have that policy in place is there has been issues with deed restricted units and people not living, not following those deed restrictions, and so this is a way to try to catch that. It was actually a representative from Intermountain Mortgage who was there with the homeowner, and I think he brought up some really important points that I think a future discussion is needed, and that's what I'm really excited for with this housing authority, is that we can address some of these issues and try to come up with solutions so we don't have to make more of these difficult decisions.
Well, I think you also heard that there may be as many as 20 other deed-restricted affordable homes, and again, being taxed as a second home. So how do we resolve that?
Yeah, that's something that our we've worked to address in the past, and so currently, and Stephanie Pohl was on the call, and she mentioned what her department has worked to do, and they notify the community partners, so whether it's an affordable home in Park City Municipal or with Mountainlands, like you mentioned, or Habitat for Humanity. And so now there's an additional notice that goes out. The idea is that those stakeholders would also help to notify homeowners. But I think as most people know, buying a home is a very complicated process. There's a lot of paperwork, and sometimes things get missed. And so I think this is an important one that we need to address.
Okay, so it sounds like the council doesn't support refunds for anyone who has paid that secondary rate. It's kind of, yeah.
At this time. I think we're trying to be consistent with the current policy that we have in place. But I think we're all open to addressing these situations.
And in terms of the tax notices, do they go out in Spanish as well as English? Do people have a choice of how to receive those notices?
I don't believe so, and that was my concern in this particular case, that possibly a language barrier was the issue. So again, I think that's another opportunity for us as a county to look at these cases and to figure out how we can best avoid them in the future.
All right, let's see, the county lands extension request to use tax grant money asked for an extension to use one of the grants awarded on the 910 Ranch. That's because their baseline documentation, as it was called, it was delayed. Council granted the request, and can you tell us what they meant by that delay?
These things take a long time, and there were some significant delays in coming together with all of the local stakeholders, coming up with a management plan. These involve lots of different departments and organizations, state, federal, and local agencies working together. And I think just dealing with some of the aftermath of COVID, a lot of things have been delayed. We're confident that they'll be able to use the rest of the grant by the end of this year.
All right. So was it due to the federal funding freeze?
That would be a good question for Jess Kirby. I think there's been a lot of question about funding and uncertainty, and I'm sure that added to some of the delay.
All right. You were also there for the ribbon cutting of High Valley Transit's new Siegel Lilly campus. I mean, what was your impression?
Oh, I was so happy to be there. It was really nice to be part of a celebration. This has been a long time coming. I'm of course newer to council, but many of my colleagues and High Valley Transit, of course, have been working on this for years. And so it was really exciting to see it all come together. It was really well attended. There were quite a few people there, including some of our local representatives. It was just great to see everyone come together and celebrate good news for our community.
All right. You mentioned that the Housing Authority, this might be a topic for them to take up on with regard to the tax notices. You are one of, I think, three council members on that committee. Have you guys started meeting?
On
the Housing Authority?
We haven't started meeting yet. We've been emailing back and forth and just trying to set up our initial meeting. That will be headed up by Maddie McDonough. And so she'll be coordinating that. And I believe our first meeting will be coming up here in the next month.
Okay, so this is a public body, right? So there'll be public notices and open meetings for it?
Yep, there'll be public meetings. They'll be open to everyone.
Yeah, what's your sense in terms of what business needs to be taken care of first?
I think, you know, and what's been initially budgeted for it is to come up with the initial housing plan. To work with the three counselors that you mentioned, and then with the additional four members that we just appointed a couple of weeks ago. And that's really, I think, our starting point is to come up with that framework, to set goals, and to plan. I think in addition, a housing dashboard for the website is something that Jeff Jones and Maddie McDonough are also going to help implement this first year.
Okay. Any word from Dakota Pacific and a possible administrative application there?
No word yet. We're all just waiting. As you know, we did pass a temporary zoning ordinance just a few weeks ago. That was to be in compliance with State Bill 26. We're waiting to see. I'm sure they're weighing their options right now. And as soon as we hear, we'll be ready to respond.
Okay. And in a couple of weeks, the annual city tour headed to Trucking, Reno, I think. Are you going to be part of that?
I am.
Yeah. Any ideas in terms of what you'll be looking at?
Yeah, I'm really excited. I went on city tour a couple of years ago with you when we went to Boise and Ketchum and Sun Valley. And so looking forward to this year in my new role to participate. You know, California, of course, has different challenges, but a lot of the same that we are faced with. And so I'm really interested, particularly in looking at regional transit solutions and affordable housing, and really just spending time with the leadership class and other local leaders, getting to know them and collaborating, I think is the best part of these trips.
Okay, Megan, anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I did just want to mention, and this was mentioned in our meeting last night, next week is National Public Works Appreciation Week. That's May 18th through the 24th. And this was really the highlight of the meeting yesterday for me. I just think it's so important to acknowledge our public works departments across the county and in our municipalities. So I would encourage everyone to think about the folks that remove our snow, that maintain our roads and signs, that do flood control, stormwater management, engineering, weed control, fleet maintenance, solid waste. I mean, these are essential workers in our community. And so I hope everyone can recognize them next week and always.
Yeah, kind of all those jobs that you just expected to be done until they're not. Then you notice them, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Megan, thanks.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
That's Summit County Council Member Megan McKenna. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Colville Mayor Mark Marsh has been honored for making his streets safer for pedestrians at the 2025 Zero Fatality Safety Summit. Marsh was awarded the Special Achievement in Pedestrian Safety for his efforts to implement and fund safety improvements like better sidewalk access. After he was hit by a car, the Summit County Health Department says that Marsh has become an advocate for child safety. The Zero Fatality Summit in Sandy last month focused on traffic safety, pedestrian and bike safety, enforcement, engineering, driver education, and other topics related to reaching Utah's goal of zero fatalities on our roads. Well, Fire Films presents a free screening of the film by award-winning director Andy Timoner, The In-Between. In the studio with details, I have the CEO of Fire Films, Park City resident Sharon Anderson-Morris. Good morning. Good to see you.
Hi, Leslie.
First, start by telling us, what is Fire Films?
Fire Films is an entity that focuses on world-changing documentaries. We seek films that inspire, motivate, and create change. And this is why we're here today. Fire Films was developed in 2009. And if you want to learn more about Fire Films, you can go to firefilms.org.
Okay, so how do you get these films to screen?
People come to me. You know, the documentary film business is so difficult right now. No one knows where to find the home. And then it goes from sale from one to another network, to another network. And the filmmakers are really not getting paid what they deserve to be paid. So it's almost like a dying industry, which is so important because the people that make documentary films are usually the most informed because they're really excited about what they're working on. So that's why I fell in love with it.
Okay, so this is, there is a membership as part of Fire Films,
right.
But this film that you're offering isn't going to be part of that membership program?
Right. The membership fee is $195 a year, $195 per year. But no, this is just, we find films about things that are really critical that we're going to be talking about today that we think the world should know about that can create change. We're all about creating change in a positive way on our planet as we're living in right now. So we're talking today about The In-Between because I was very moved when somebody presented this film to me and I watched it, and it's in our own state that we're creating such change. And so that's why, you know, why we're talking today about what we can do to spread the word about what's happening that's really important right now throughout the world, where people can take this and change wherever they are when they're motivated buy a film like this.
Okay. So tell us about the documentary, The In-Between. I mean, what's it about?
So The In-Between is about something that was created in 2015 in Salt Lake City, where the homeless that were on the streets with their animals that were in that should have been in hospice, very sick people. This is a place where the homeless can go and have end-of-life care. Or, surprisingly enough, when you give a homeless person and the ability to bring his or her animal to a place, a community, that's a loving place with doctors and medications, they're licensed, and a community instead of just being out there by yourself. It just moved me to tears when I saw this. So what they found is a lot of these people that were dying in this community got well. And then the In-Between also helps when they get well to place them in positions and another place to stay. So this is the only, The In-Between is the name of this place in Salt Lake City. This is the only facility in the country that has done this. I mean, we should be really proud of that. So on Tuesday, we have 25 seats available for free to come to Fire Films headquarters. And if they want to, I need to have an email, give my email address out. Then we'll take 25 people and we'll be showing the film. And then we'll have the interview with the director, Andy Timoner. And we'll have also the head of The In-Between, who will be with us as well, which is Jillian. She's just delightful. And we'll be doing a Q&A afterwards.
Okay, so will they be in person or will it be virtual?
Jillian will be in person. We'll be Zooming in, Andy.
Okay, so it's Tuesday, May 20th. You'll provide the address once people get a confirmation email. And what time does the film start?
We're doing a 5:30 reception. 6:30 is the film. 7:40 is Q&A.
Okay.
And then the following day, we're going to visit the Inn at 11 o'clock.
Yeah. So why the success of this? I mean, does the film explain that? I mean, is it the fact that now they have shelter and food and somebody caring for them, or is it just the animal connection that most places don't allow pets?
That's a really great question. That's a great question, because in our country, a huge problem is that people that are homeless have animals before they're homeless. So they're on the streets because there are most places will not accept homeless and animals. And I'll tell you what, if I couldn't bring my Luca with me and I'm on the street, I'm not going anywhere. He's my boy. So this is like part of the beauty of this facility is that they can bring their animals. They can have end-of-life care. They can have good doctors. They can have a community. They can have good food, great bed. And it saves the state a lot of money. I mean, this is like a no-brainer. And I just wish that, you know, this is why I'm here. If we could take this and model that throughout the world, it would be a better place.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Andy. I mean, she is, she's been to the Sundance a few times as well. Emmy nominated. She's won 2 grand jury prizes at Sundance.
Yeah. She said, in fact, one of our other Farrah films was called Last Flight Home, done by Andy. It's a really great film about end of life, and it's about her personal experience with her father, who was in hospice, and trying to help him with his wishes. Fantastic film. And also, we have to also mention that the Utah Film Center has been a big part of and funded The In-Between, and so that locally, that's very important. It takes a lot of money to make a film, and it's very hard. And so I'm really concerned about our documentary film model right now, we all know Sundance, oops. But it's a difficult business to be in. So Andy is right now in a different country, but she's really doing some great work on just exposing things that we should think about, that maybe we could change, you know? And that's what I look for, is directors who are looking to change for the better, not just cover something because it's fun, but something that we can learn from and get inspired by and create action.
Okay. Tell me, you said people do need to email you. You're going to cut it off at 25. Who do they email?
Sam, S like Sharon, A like Anderson, M like Morris, at Strat, S-T-R-A-T, news, NEWS.com. Sam at StratNews.com. And I have 25 free seats to the screening and the Q&A.
Great.
And to come with us to go to the Inn on Wednesday at 11.
Okay. And again, if people would like more information about Fire Films, the
firefilms.org.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I just I think that we should be really proud of what we're doing with the in-between. I mean, what an amazing transformation of the helping homeless people that are really sick.
Okay. Sharon, thanks so much for coming in. Sharon Anderson Morris again, the CEO of Fire Films. That email once again is sam@stratnews.com to be one of the 25 to receive a free screening here. Earlier this month, the nonprofit organization Bridge 21 opened its first housing for neurodiverse adults. In the studio to tell us more, I have the executive director of Bridge 21, Stephanie Polkoff, along with one of the home's residents, Ava Jennings. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Stephanie, start by telling us what Bridge 21 is.
Bridge 21 is a nonprofit established in 2020 that addresses the shortage of housing opportunities for people with cognitive and developmental autism disabilities. We provide housing options, you know, kind of tailored to the sensory needs and the modifications that they could need to live independently, and we provide the independent living support, the physical support, staff, and the modifications in the home to be able to do that.
All right, so how did this housing come about?
Well, since 2020, we have been raising money, and takes a lot of funding to buy real estate in Park City. So we were able to do that, get the complete funding for a home in 2024. So we started the build in July of 2024 and just finished April 18th, 2025.
Okay, and what did you build?
We built a 4-bedroom, 4.5-bathroom home in Silver Creek Village. Every bedroom has a bathroom, so each resident has their own space and their own bathroom space. The community living space is, you know, kitchen, living, dining room, and then we have a what we call a calm room or a sensory room where there's no electronics or anything like that. There's just bean bags and rocking chairs and weighted blankets and things like that, so you can take a breather, a timeout, or just relax if you want to. And then we also have a game room, rec room downstairs that has tables with games, puzzles, you know, all of that stuff. We have a ping pong table. We just have rec room area. So we have the community spaces, but we also have, you know, the quiet spaces.
Yeah, so project cost was what?
The total cost for just the house itself was about $1.1 million.
Yeah, and just private donations, or did you receive any kind of grant funding, or
no federal or state grant funding? We did all private foundation funding. Yes.
All right, and then
yes.
The land was donated, or how
well,
did that work?
In Silver Creek Village, it all comes together. So you buy the house and the land, you know, all at the same time. It, you know, it's a already developed community structure. You know.
Okay, so you mentioned a 4-bedroom, so you've got 4 residents. Is that
yes.
how it works?
Yes.
Ava, you're one of them. How did
yes.
you find out about the opportunity to be there?
I just saw it was an opportunity to live there, and so now I live there.
Yeah. Well, tell us about some of the amenities of the house. I mean, what is it that you like about it?
Something I like about it, just like we get our own space. Like, we don't have to share a room, and that's nice.
Yeah. Is this the first time you've lived on your own?
No. I went to Utah State, and I had four roommates also.
Okay, because that's what I was going to ask next. I mean, the whole roommate situation can sometimes be a challenge. I mean, things come up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people
definitely
don't clean up after themselves.
Yeah,
or,
definitely.
So
yeah.
How is that working?
It's working. not as well we want to. So
yeah, what's the biggest complaints? People just not picking up after themselves?
Yes.
Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
TV's too loud or whatever.
But gosh, Leslie is like, she's...
I've had roommates.
She's telepathic here. She knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
But that's part of... We have a program coordinator, Meredith Powell. So she's, you know, the daily check-in with the residents. So,
yeah,
you know, we kind of modify the program as we go along to make sure that we're meeting everybody's needs. And it's a work in progress. It's only been... almost 2 weeks. Saturday it'll be 2 weeks, so
yeah,
it hasn't been that long. They moved in May 1st. May 3rd, sorry,
yeah,
you are correct, as usual. So yes,
yeah,
we are attempting to, mm-hmm, you know, get everybody's schedules down and their chore charts and
yeah,
manage the responsibilities of the house,
yes,
help
yeah
them manage the responsibilities of the house.
So how do those chore charts work? I mean, you take on...
Like, whatever, like, there's different colors, like there's purple, there's pink, and there's yellow. So, like, whatever you're assigned to, you have to do it. Like, do that day, what you're assigned to.
Okay, and that helps kind of resolve some of the disputes. And
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and it's posted where everybody
yeah
can see it, and everybody
yeah
has their own color and their own color chart, and
yeah,
they know what they have to do that day.
Yeah.
It's
yeah
done.
Why was Ava a good candidate for this housing?
We had an application process mm-hmm that started January 1st, so there were some... parameters around that application. They had to apply. They had to be able to only need mild to mild moderate support, because this first house doesn't have 24/7 provider care. You know, they have to be able to do some things on their own. We do daily check-ins, and you know, we provide the support. We recognize the needs when they come up, and we modify the environment to help meet those needs. So as far as like why was Ava, she met those qualifications, right? She only needs mild moderate support to get through her day, mm-hmm, but she does need some support. She can't just be out there on her own, as are the rest of our residents, you know. So yeah, we went through an interview process. She applied, we went through an interview with me and then an interview with our team, our board of directors and a couple of community members. And then we sat down and talked about it as a group. And then we met the roommates, the potential roommates. And then, you know, we made a plan. And then they signed a lease. Our lease has also got some contingencies because there are two 30-day trial periods so that everyone feels comfortable, both resident and me as a nonprofit provider of the housing. So there are built-in outs, kind of, as you want to, you know, trial periods, first 30 days and then another 30 days, and then after that you can sign a 6-month lease. So we have some scaffolding in place to, you know, to support the needs of everyone
mm-hmm
going forward.
Yeah, so the rent then is paid for by the residents?
Yes, and rent is paid. The rent includes everything, including the utilities and the staffing and all the supportive amenities, because we actually do quite a few things. We have a whole educational series that we offer to the residents. I mean, they don't have to take it, but our goal for our residents are that they become more independent in adult living skills, and that they may not live there for the rest of their lives, but they could go out and live on their own eventually.
Mm-hmm. So, Ava, since you're paying rent, do you need to go out and work to help
yeah
pay with that?
Yeah. I'm working at Clockwork Cafe right now.
Okay, and how do you get there?
I take my three-wheeler e-bike to work, or I walk, or I take High Valley.
Okay.
We're big fans of High Valley Transit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And microtransit, I guess, if they need it.
Yeah. Yep.
Or is there a bus stop real close to?
There's a bus stop, but there's also, like, we can take my micro for High Valley.
Okay. Let's see. Any plans to build more?
Yes. We hope this is just the first of multiple, you know, neuro-inclusive housing opportunities for the, you know, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We do have plans. Thank you very much for having Megan McKenna on right before before me, because I've been talking to her about some plans with affordable housing and how we can access some of that. So yes, we would like to have another house within a year, either us renting it or starting a build.
Yeah. So if the house is basically paid for, right? Or do you owe?
Well, our first house was paid for.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So the rent is now really just kind of covering the services, utilities, taxes.
Correct.
And anything left over then to put towards new housing or?
There's not. Mm-hmm. Their rent is really affordable and it technically doesn't cover the other expenses. The nonprofit covers the rest of it. So I'm still raising money. Gift to Bridge21ParkCity.com. So I feel like I might be always raising money, right? So yeah, we're still trying to get the funding and the support for the support as well as the housing. It's a big job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, are you looking again at Silver Creek Village? Is there?
We would love to do that. Mm-hmm. Because it would raise the cost much less, you know. It wouldn't be as expensive as if I had to have two different staff, one staff in the same area. So that would be very helpful.
Okay. Let's see, anything else you want to tell us?
No, thank you for having us on.
Yeah,
thank you for supporting Bridge 21. We are moving forward with our mission and super excited to share it with everybody.
All right, well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City Council was scheduled to discuss possibly intervening in the Yarrow Doubletree Hotel redevelopment application this week. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports that the discussion has been reset for June.
On Wednesday, the owner of the Yarrow on Park Avenue requested to move the May 15th discussion to June 5th. No reason was provided for the delay. Property owner Singerman Real Estate has been seeking a permit to demolish the decades-old hotel to make way for a modern mixed-use development with a condo hotel, affordable housing, commercial space, and offices. The Park City Planning Commission voted 5-1 against the project in March due to its 45-foot height, which exceeds the 35-foot limit set out in city zoning. Commissioners were also critical of other aspects of the project, citing inadequate landscaping and setbacks. In a May 8th letter to the mayor and city council, an attorney for Singerman Real Estate said they need to reach a decision about a path forward for the project by June 1st. The attorney, Justin Keyes, said the owner is actively marketing the property and has received several offers. The letter asked the city council to consider approving the project under its broad legislative powers. A new state law passed this year, SB 262, allows local legislative bodies like city councils to settle land use litigation with a private property owner. According to Park City attorney Margaret Plain, the council could only step in if an applicant has exhausted the city's administrative appeal processes and then filed a lawsuit in district court. At that point, the city could settle with the property owner through consent agreement, bypassing a planning commission review. Another option would be to negotiate a development agreement, which the council could approve as a settlement after a planning commission recommendation and public hearing. Park City Councilmember Jeremy Rubel previously asked about how the council could get involved in the Yarrow redevelopment application. Keyes, the attorney for the project, said in the letter that the proposed development aligns with the city's goals for the Bonanza Park neighborhood. He said the site would include over 40% of public open space and several pedestrian improvements, such as working with the city on a new tunnel underneath Kearns Boulevard. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, after a nod from the Heber City Planning Commission, tattoo shops could soon be allowed in some downtown zones. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the proposed changes have one more hoop to jump through.
Heber Planning Commissioners voted unanimously Tuesday to support tattoo shops and other body art facilities in several commercial and industrial zones. City Planner Jacob Roberts said the proposed code amendments follow months of conversation with a mother and daughter, Julia and Oakley Franklin, who have advocated for the city to change its rules.
A few months ago, at the beginning of the year, we had a business owner approach the city, having gone through all of the other regulatory agencies in the valley, only to find out that we do not permit tattoo anywhere in the city.
The Franklins have argued tattoo businesses will be cleaner and safer if they're allowed and regulated, rather than operating out of homes or other unsuitable spaces. Several locals wrote in to support the changes. Their emails were read aloud during the meeting, including a message from Megan Harris.
Body art might not be for everyone, but there are many people who want or need these services. We would rather keep our business in our valley than drive 30 to 60 minutes somewhere else.
And Jeannie Richards wrote the applicants wanted to ensure body art is hygienic.
Allowing licensed and well-regulated facilities in our city will not only provide new opportunities for local artists and entrepreneurs, but also ensure that this practice is carried out in safe, clean, and professional environments.
The changes will also add definitions to the code. Roberts said historically, it's been murky what counts as a tattoo or similar body art. Body piercing, permanent makeup, microblading, and tattooing would be allowed. Tattoo artists could open businesses in the commercial, industrial, and business park zones downtown. Now, the Planning Commission's recommendation is shared with the Heber City Council. It will be up to the council to adopt the changes or not. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. I'm Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Christian Center of Park City's Director of Counseling and Wellness Center, Leah Harder, stepping down from her leadership role at the nonprofit. She joined the Christian Center in 2012 and has helped grow the center's counseling and wellness program from two clinicians to a team of 18 counselors, clinicians, and administrative support staff. She's staying with the center, but says she wants to focus on serving her own clients and supervising Christian Center clinicians who are working toward licensure. The Christian Center offers physical and mental health services in both English and Spanish for individuals, couples, families, teens, and children. Well, paid parking will soon go into effect at the Bonanza Flat Area Trailhead, a popular summer destination at the upper elevations of Park City. City residents, however, will have the opportunity to register for free parking. On June 2nd, this paid hourly parking starts at the Blood Lakes, Bonanza Flat, and Empire Pass trailheads. Park City parking manager Johnny Watson says there'll be a $5 per hour rate during the weekdays and $8 per hour rate on the weekends. Watson says they do not plan to implement time limits on parking.
We're kind of letting the pricing control the turnover. But if we do start to see long-term vehicle parking, you know, where folks are just kind of parking and staying put, and paying those larger fees, we may impose time limits.
Paid parking will also be in effect at a new small trailhead located at the intersection of Guardsman's Pass Road and Pine Canyon Road, located near the Little Joe Loop Trail. A free locals parking permit is available to residents of the city limits, mostly the 84060 zip code. That's because taxpayers funded a $25 million bond to purchase and preserve Bonanza Flat in 2017. Residents can apply online for a free parking permit and must include vehicle registration, photo ID, and proof of residency. A link to register can be found online at kpcw.org. Up to two local parking permits are available per household. Along with paid parking, the city plans to expand public transit to Bonanza Flat. Starting midsummer, Park City Transit's Purple Bus will service the area's trailheads on a 15-minute frequency from the Old Town Transit Center. Extended service will be limited to 4 days a week, Friday through Monday. Vehicles will be ADA compliant and will be able to accommodate up to 11 bikes. The Purple Bus normally travels between Old Town and the Montage Hotel.